From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Well, kinda. It's a much bigger, more stout, astute version of the Kilmeade. That's right, you're speaking with Tyrus. I'm filling in for BK while he go work on his leg day and get his legs right. He's been looking kind of skinny in the legs lately, according to Dana Perino. But I am excited to be here today to get a chance to talk a little more. The cuffs are off, and it's my way. I can talk about whatever I want to talk about. And I talked about a little bit last night on the Gutfeld show where Greg and I were discussing the whole, you know, bigger than Watergate signal war plans debacle that the left is acting like it was somebody got the codes to the nuclear to the red button. But it's just refreshing that was a mistake made, 1,000%. But Greg was right when he said this is not a story. He's not going to participate anymore in it. But the thing is about accountability. And I think when it comes to accountability, it's your response has to match the accountability, which means if I'm, you know, 15 minutes late home for dinner and I didn't bother to call, the response is like, hey, you should have called. And, you know, that was the criticism and I should have came back with, you're right. I should have called. I apologize. And you should be able to move on. But when it's like, oh, you should have called. You did this on purpose. You've been doing this all the time. It was a plot against me and what I had going on. You have no respect for it. And it turns into this whole giant thing. And you don't understand where the anger and where the question is coming from. And look, and what's crazy is we have a transparent presidency. We have a president that can answer questions, can do this crazy thing called think on the spot without reading from a card or a teleprompter or having someone else come out and speak for him or tell us, you know, we'll circle back to that or we'll get to you. Or as we said, or just, hey, I'm not answering that question because it's a difficult question and I don't have my lie right yet. If we could run SOT 3, this is a great example of this is how you handle an issue.
Director Gabbard testified that any information that would indicate that the U.S. or its allies are going to make an attack should be classified. The Secretary of Defense has said that the information in those messages was not classified. Are you going to ask him to review whether it should have been, should flight times and sequencing
be classified? Sure, I'll ask him to do that. Sure, I would. It would be. You can view that two ways, frankly. There's a lot of ways to answer that question, but I'd certainly ask him to take a look at it.
So, again, for anybody who's been covering the previous administration, that question would never have been allowed because it was too long. I think it was a paragraph question with a lot of details. And again, President Trump, we shouldn't have to applaud this, but I feel like you kind of do, was able to answer at a high level and be very open about, like, yeah, 1,000% I would ask him that. And I'm going to do that. And, you know, we're going to follow through. Here's the thing. Was it a mistake? Yes, 1,000%. Is it to the level of which we're hearing from the left? No. But there still was accountability. We still know the chain of command. We know, you know, Mike Knox, I take full responsibility. Pete Hedges stepped in and he talked about it. The president addressed it. So, and you hear him like, we need accountability. What more do you need from that? And apparently, Hit 7, Rep. Jim Himes listen to this.
Everyone here knows that the Russians or the Chinese could have gotten all of that information. And they could have passed it on to the Houthis, who easily could have repositioned weapons and altered their plans to knock down planes or sink ships.
They could have. They could have also diversified their stocks, invested in Tesla, and seen it go up 9 to 8 points and make some money on the weekend. Houlda, coulda, woulda, shoulda. Like, worst case scenarios, that's not what's based on. Could bad things have happened? Yes. Did bad things happen? No. Does it need to be corrected? 100%. But you don't get to go down what about what isms and, oh, this could have happened and this could have been. It's a waste of time, and it's a justly unfair criticism. And again, it's not just one. This is probably the most egregious one. Is roll 8.
This text message is clearly classified information. Secretary Hegseth has disclosed military plans as well as classified information, he needs to resign immediately. He needs to resign immediately, and a full investigation needs to be undertaken.
Well, didn't he just do it? He said he lists all the things he did. None of that's accurate, and needs to resign immediately. If you're this much of a stickler, then the one thing about people who are extremely, like, they are set in the rules and they are set in these things, and if there are any mistakes, you'll be held accountable, as it's across the board. So I was looking for the tape of his outrage when Afghanistan went down and we lost 13 soldiers of the horrible planning and all the mistakes that were made. They were pretty silent about that. And again, it's not about whataboutisms, but to use, I think it was Senator Crow's words, apples to oranges. Apples being, in this case, 13 soldiers losing their life, hundreds of people, thousands of people's lives changed forever, not for the positive. I don't think things are going swimmingly over in Afghanistan for the several hundreds of people that were left behind, not supported anymore. I wonder how women's rights is going on over there. Probably not that well. But that is a situation that should have invoked outrage across the board. It's in my tent, so, oh, I have nothing to see here. And then again, you're seeing the same thing, but this playbook doesn't work. It was proven in this election, the last election, that Americans are no longer falling for it. You can no longer do the smokescreen stuff. Everybody can see. So I keep waiting for them to do the one thing that will help their party. And that's cooperate. Work with the other side who has the best ideas right now. Why is it that every time there's a issue, if it's the 20%, the Democrats are all over it, and the 80% is on the Republican side right now? And it seems to me like you would think at some point you got to tip your hat to the other team. You got to say, hey, you know what? Our way's not working. Their way seems to be working. They're connecting with people. Let's work with them. Because here's the thing. The people that left you to vote might come back. Again, I'm giving advice that they're not going to listen to anyways, because you can't communicate. That's another thing. You can't communicate with them because they're always talking from a position of, if you're not like me, there's something wrong with you. And there was a word for that. And we seems to be the new face of the party, of the Democratic Party. Whereas Republicans, we're willing to work with anyone. You look at this administration, there are some pretty significant people that were hardcore Democrats that are in President Trump's cabinet. He doesn't care what your affiliation is. He cares about, can you do the job? And so when you see this is what's happening and the American people are getting behind it and they feel good about it, to go back to the old playbook to where this is worse than trying to fearmonger and create scenarios to try to scare the American people. And I just feel like it's fallen on deaf ears. And at some point, someone in the Democratic Party has to say, you know what? It's a time for me to be the adult in the room, because two good parties is good for this country. President Trump has a job to do, but he's not a dumb man. He understands how the swamp works, and he knows that his time is short to get things done, because it's only a matter of time before the right starts to fold into some of the lefts, and they start to do all the other, Doge starts to uncover stuff, and then all of a sudden Republicans, we're going to see it on our side too. But this is the time to get things done, and this is the time for at least one Democrat to really look hard in the mirror and say, I was sworn in to serve my people. Are you really serving your people? Are you serving your people by wasting time perpetuating? We have enough things going on in the world right now that we don't need made up stories and made up fantasy tragedies. What's going on in the Middle East, and what's going on in Ukraine, like what's going on in Africa, what's going on in our own streets, what's going on in North Carolina and Tennessee and in California, all these great states that were decimated by natural disasters with little or no help from the government. They're still rebuilding, and we're hearing horror stories all across this country. There are things that we should be talking about. There are things that there should be senators and congressmen outraged about. There should be, why can't we see what's going on in California? How many new homes are starting to go up? Because we're not seeing these wonderful stories. We're being, the news cycle is trying to be filled with this fake where you need 14 panelists to talk about what could have happened when instead of talking about what is actually happening in this country right now. And I think that's the difference between the party. I think right now President Trump and the Republicans are working on real issues that you can solve or try to make better. The other side is working in feelings. And right now they're still caught up in their feelings and they're upset. And no matter what the right says, it's wrong. And not just wrong, it is a literal sin against God and the entire world. And hopefully some Democrat will stand up and we'll start getting back to getting things done on both sides.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I'm Emily Campagno, host of the Fox True Crime Podcast. This week, retired police chief Brian Jarvis joins me to discuss his work investigating Eileen Wuornos, one of America's most notorious female serial killers.
Listen and follow now at foxtruecrime.com.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Yep, he's apparently so busy that I had to fill in for him today, but that's right, you got Tyrus on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Excited as always anytime I get the call. I'm like in the bullpen just throwing around waiting for Fox to... And you know what? It's Thursday, so you know it's opening day, I believe. Excited about that. I'm a diehard Red Sox fan, and I'm very optimistic about this year. And I'm also very optimistic about the new health craze that seems to be going around this country. Everyone's trying to get fit and... trim off a few pounds from back in the day or during the pandemic or the last 4 years of being glued to the TV set because you're trying to make sense of what has just been said to you. So it's nice that we're all starting to get loose and doing some exercising, and I'm all for it. I'm all about that life. I've been posting it on my social media, getting back into shape. For me, it was about being more active with my kids, being able to, life after wrestling does not mean that I just gain a bunch of weight and get old. I still got a lot of gas left in the tank. And so I'm just doing all kinds of new workout stuff, and I'm having fun with that. I'm doing some boxing stuff.
Tyrus,
yo.
Sorry to jump in. You got a call coming in.
Okay.
Ingrid.
Oh.
Hello?
Hey, honey. I'm working.
Hi.
How are you? I'm working.
Well, I know, but I thought that you have a show in Andover, Massachusetts tonight. 1,200 people are waiting to see you. So I thought we agreed that you were not going to work this morning.
No. I agreed not to work tonight. But Brian asked me to fill in for him. So I'm on the radio.
Oh,
again.
So when Brian asks you to do something, that's what you do. But when your wife asks you to do something, okay, you kind of push it to the side as if 1,200 people aren't waiting to see you. And it's a 4-hour drive from where you are now.
I'll be there in plenty of time. 1,000% I'll be on time. But again, anytime I get a chance to do the radio show, I'm going to do it. And it's a great, it's a great also opportunity for me to sell the show.
Wait. Let's use this opportunity now that you're playing on the radio this morning.
I'm not playing.
Why don't we tell them, besides your sold out show in Andover, Massachusetts tonight, that you actually have a show in Grand Rapids, Michigan on April 3rd, East Lansing, Michigan on April 4th. You're back in Middletown, Ohio, where J.D. Vance is from, on May 17th. You have all these cities coming up that we could be telling people about since you chose to go play on the radio this morning for Brian instead of making me comfortable and getting your butt over to Andover, Massachusetts.
Okay, again, I'm not playing. I don't play. I do. This is my job. This is work. I'm in the bullpen. It's opening day, and Brian said, "Hey, can you come in and throw three innings for me on the radio show?" And I just assumed that my wife would be like, "Yeah, you go get it. You get that dollar. Do that."
Yeah,
work.
I'm super supportive about it, as long as you also talk about the stuff that I do. So, like, you're going to be in Omaha on July 11th, Concordia, Kansas, July 13th. I mean, I could keep going because you have
yes,
like, all
no
these
doubt about
on
it.
Your link tree.
1,000%. Where is it again? It's on my link tree, right?
Yes, it's on your link tree. That's going to be the safest, most effective, and affordable way to get your tickets.
Awesome. Listen, I was talking about health stuff before you were called.
You? We're talking about it? To who?
To America. And you know, because I don't know if you've noticed, but I've slimmed down a lot lately.
Yes, you look great.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Having said that, I had a guest to talk about health and fitness and nutrition and, you know, especially what's going on with RFK Jr., but they are no longer here because you called during the time that I was supposed to speak to them. So
it's meant to be then.
Or that's one way to put it. Since you're here and I need a guest to talk about health, and it just so happens that I believe you are a master trainer and nutrition expert. Well, dictator, because, you know, you.
Well, that's the reason you have not previously asked for my opinion when other people are in earshot, because I'm a little blunt about it. Like, as a mom of three and someone who lost 150 pounds naturally the hard way, diet and exercise, I am a little harsh about it. Like, we have a type 1 diabetic son who is only 5% of diabetics are type 1. He did not do it to himself. There's absolutely no way he can cure himself. He's dependent on insulin for the rest of his life. And to see so many Americans being type 2 and pre-diabetic, even children now, it's really frustrating as a mom. Because I'm like, our kid cannot fix himself. It's autoimmune. His pancreas is dead. He can't cure himself. And all these people are walking around and they can actually fix their problem. And it's really through movement and how they eat. And it's frustrating. And so, yeah, I'm like really blunt about things like that. And you say I don't sugarcoat things well enough. No
yes,
pun intended.
That's the term that I would use. Yes, you do not sugarcoat anything, not even when sugar is probably needed.
The main topic.
Yeah, like get a cookie or ice cream and stuff. Like I said, that was a difficult thing for me to give up because of comfort food. Do you think with RFK Jr. Taking over and his commitment to food being healthy again, and or at least giving people the information, do you think it's something that if people have the healthy option with the actual information, they'll take it in? Or do you think we're just too far gone with the sugar addiction? Because it's
a little bit of both. I mean, obviously we are too far gone, and it's mostly the sugar, but it's also other chemical ingredients they're putting in food that make us addicted and never satisfied. So it is an addiction. It is a problem. It's going to be really, really difficult. But you start with the children. And so one of the things I'm really happy they're doing, and I've said all along, is that the food stamps and the EBT, I am not someone who's opposed to that. Like, I do believe that parts of all of our lives, whether we're sick or we're struggling with a job or whatever, we should all be allowed at some point to use that benefit when needed for a short term. The problem is, as someone who did use it for about a year when my children were very, very little before I met you, is that it's a lot of money they give you. And you can buy whatever the heck you want. I was shocked. You can buy any junk food you want, but you know if you try to buy a protein bar, you can't.
See, and that's blunt truth with my wife, Ingrid. Thank you so much, honey. I'm going to go back to work now.
Patron, we craft our tequila using high-quality natural ingredients without additives. No sweeteners, no extracts, no secrets. In fact, Patron's secret ingredient is that we have no secret ingredients. Just 100% additive-free tequila made with 100% Weber Blue Agave, water, and thyme. Patron, 100% additive-free tequila. Visit PatronTequila.com to learn more. The perfect way to enjoy Patron is responsibly. Copyright 2025, imported by Patron Spirits Company, Coral Gables, Florida. Tequila 40% ABV.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Have they figured it out that the identity piece of this is more important than the actual substance behind it?
Well, they've been doing it for decades. I mean, we've saw the welfare queens. They've seen the Southern strategy. We've seen it over and over. It's an old playbook. And we're as dumb as we want to be that we allow them to do this with CRT and ESG and DEI and every three-letter word.
And then they demonize people.
Yeah, demonize, and they weaponize grievance. They other people. They talk down to people, past people. They humiliate people. They weaponize difficult issues. But the bottom line is, and I think it goes back to what we began with, is, and I applaud you for this, is we cannot continue to be on the defense reacting to this. We've got to go on the offense. We got to meet people where they are. But I also think this, and this is where, you know, this is part of the conversation I'm trying to have, is you got to respect people you disagree with, even, and you can't just dismiss people.
This How notion do you fight of, it?
It's, and well, this notion
I think
of
I could kick most of their ass. I do think they want to do. I know I cannot run them, but I don't know if we're going to fall into that place where we want to. Okay, we challenge you to a WWE fight here type of thing.
Man, boy, did that start a party! Joining me today, always an honor and a pleasure. Anytime I get to speak to Mr. Mayor Glenn Jacobs, aka Kane, but. It's funny when two worlds come together, isn't it, sir?
It absolutely is. Thank you for having me on, big man. I really appreciate it.
Always. Well, you are. You're just becoming a little. You're over, brother. Like every time I turn the TV, I see your smiling face. Like you are definitely in the shine, sir.
Well, when someone throws a fastball, well, actually, that was probably a hanging curve on an 0-3 count right down the middle, I'm probably going to take a swing.
Yeah.
that's what that was.
You know, and it was when that statement came out, I think I tweeted like within 6 seconds of seeing that interview. I was like, because I knew the line was going to be long, you know, for who was going to
take that fight. Right.
And then lo and behold, when I had never known you to be a booker before, you know, and it's become, I'm getting asked about it, but you have taken this to the whole other next level to where it's a charity event. And then someone made me an awesome thing where it's, you know, the great Hall of Fame tag team, which is, of course, the Undertaker yourself, Brothers of Destruction, you know, but for one night only, Brothers of Tesla in a truck. You know, I think that it might, I don't know if it's going to be as big as the Mega Powers, but it might be. But I just, it's the things that people say, and of course, you know, we're having some fun with this, but the responsibility from politicians, it just seems like it's not there anymore to make these ridiculous statements, especially in light of what's happening with Tesla, with the terrorist attacks on there. You kind of miss decorum. I guess that's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah, it is tragic, actually. And when you watch that video and you see Gavin Newsom, who is making some great points, actually. Now, the things that he was talking about, I would argue he's wrong. There is such a thing as CRT in our schools. Otherwise, why is it when the state governments try to ban CRT in their schools? Oh, we're not teaching that. Well, okay, cool. Well, we could just ban it. Well, you can't do that.
Exactly.
DEI is an issue. And you know, it's not, I mean, man, you know, I'm all for different people. I get it. But we need to have a meritocracy in this country. You know, you shouldn't be just treated differently because you belong to a group, right?
Yeah, one way or the other.
That's how the country used to be. It was a big problem. Yep. And now it's almost like it's swinging back the other way. But he was making some really good points. Can you imagine? You could see his face and how he had that nervous laugh. And it was like, oh, no, this thing just went completely off the rails.
Yeah.
Because Tim Walz basically ran his big mouth about something. He wrote a check now that there's no way he can ever cash.
No, literally and figuratively, you know, and what pains me is that it's not just Tim Walz who's the one thing I'm seeing is I feel like, you know, we used to get, you know, and not to give away too much of the magic show that we got to be a part of, but there would be certain rules, you know, where like everyone would be like, hey, don't do this tonight. I'm going to beat his arm up. You beat the leg. Like everyone was had a plan or an idea because the goal was to be an individual and be remembered, right? Because if everyone does the same thing, the guy who did the same thing the best is going to be the one who's remembered. So now we have, instead of them going out and speaking their mind and trying to make the best statement for their constituents, now they're getting a memo with, like, everyone's doing the same move tonight. And it looks like the new memo says, cuss as much as you can and insult them beyond the pale of acceptance, to where even people who are avid cussers like myself, but I will argue it is a tapestry. That I don't think that's going to work. I don't think it is working. Just for a perfect example, I'm going to listen to Jasmine Crockett here, number 18. Listen to her, you know, this comment she made about Governor Abbott.
Because we in these hot ass Texas streets, honey. Y'all know we got Governor Hot Wheels down there. Come on now. And the only thing hot about him is that he is a hot ass mess, honey. So yes.
And no. That was a trash statement. And what bothers me about this is it's across the board. Like, that's, I guess that's the new thing. I guess they're trying to be hip and cool. Do you think it's working?
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. It's funny, too, because when I was hearing those beeps, I was like, who's trying to call me? Oh, yeah. She's cursing.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. I think what has happened, you're exactly right about a memo going out. And I think a memo went out among Democrat consultants and strategists that Donald Trump won the election because, and the Republicans are hot because they portray tough and strong.
Right.
Well, they are tough and strong. No matter what you might think of Donald Trump, he is a masculine dude. And they have confused style with substance. They think that just going out and saying those things and acting that way and trying to be tough and trying to be hip by dropping cuss words in formal settings, that makes them have they go, right? It's almost like if someone were to put on a silver and black jersey and say, hey, look at me, I'm the Oakland Raiders, I guess the Vegas Raiders now, I'm the Raiders, and then you realize that the Raiders had Bo Jackson, right? These Raiders, the Democrats, they've got Bo Derek. And there's a big problem with that. Trump backs his style up with substance.
You know, and
that's the issue.
And I think that's what hurt Tim Walz so much, was that they tried to paint this picture of him that he wasn't. And instead, I mean, you don't have to be a manly man to be a man. You don't have to be, you know, a guy who's an outdoorsman if you're not. There's nothing worse for a man to pretend to be something you're not. Because the American people, especially other men, will see right through it. That hunting thing was one of the saddest displays I'd ever saw, because he clearly had never held that gun before. He was completely uncomfortable. And it was like, but he was trying to portray this image that real men don't portray aggressive guys who live outdoors and not an alpha male type that they were going for. You can't BS us. Because we see right through it. That's the whole point. That's why guys don't have to conversate to get to know each other. You know, within the first few seconds of seeing a guy walk up to you, whether you like him or not, it's just kind of like, oh, yeah, he looks, you know. So I feel like, and now he's angry at us for giggling at him.
Sorry, I'm giggling.
So yeah, but it is.
But it's true. It's true. And you're exactly right. These guys are acting as if they were movie stars, if they were TV stars, as if they're pro wrestlers, frankly, as if they're paid actors.
It's a gimmick.
And they're not. First of all, they're not very good at it.
No.
But second of all, yes, you don't portray that. You are that. And people see right through it when you try to be something that you're not, especially in this day and age where social media is ubiquitous and you can't control a narrative anymore. So they've got a real issue in that. You know, they're trying, they've alienated vast swaths of the population. First of all, toxic masculinity. Well, I'm a guy. I consider myself kind of masculine. I didn't like that very much because I'm not an aggressive jerk. That's just, I'm a guy. That's who I am. Then you turn around and you push the transgenderism to the point now where when you look at the numbers and the self-reporting of young people who believe they're transgender has skyrocketed as a percentage compared to what it was years ago. Why is that? Well, because we talk about it all the time and we've made it hip and cool. Then you put men in women's sports. right? I have two daughters. My daughters are awesome. They're very strong people. I don't want them playing volleyball or basketball or anything else against boys because physically they just can't match up.
Yeah,
that's
I got
not
three
a
daughters.
And that's just how we are.
Yeah, I got three daughters and a son, and one of both. My son does jiu-jitsu, and my daughter wants to do jiu-jitsu. I'm not putting her in with him.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like you just it's just certain things you don't do. These are norms that are understood. They're not even 2080 debates. It's like 199. And
yeah,
to
exactly
get
right.
and to get on that one side of it. And again, here's the other thing that here's a part of being a man. It's not just the macho stuff that they grossly inflate. It's the accountability. It's the best thing about a man is when he knows when he's made a mistake and he's wrong and he apologizes or he goes too far. I'm not above it. You're certainly not above it. Not every decision you've made is the right one. And when it needs correction, you'll be the first one in line to correct yourself because that's how you lead by example. So, you know, with this Crockett situation is with the calling Governor Abbott Hot Wheels, you're out of line. You were wrong. And you shouldn't have said it. It was no class. And you've said it before and you said it again. And then instead of apologizing, you try to lie about the comment. I mean, it meant something else. What else could it have been? You know, was he sitting with a large collection of little Hot Wheel cars at a table? Is he an avid collector? No. So you made the comment, and this is what bothers me the most about left-leaning media and mainstream media. They never call them out the way, the right way. It's always has to be a compliment and a protection and a small critique. Like listen to the View here, criticize Crockett. And I use that word criticize loosely. Number 20.
She should not have made the comment at all.
You know, you should leave that stuff to the comedian.
This was beneath her. Yeah. She's just too good for this.
I agree with that because I respect her, but it's just never okay to mock someone's disability.
Yeah, I admire Jasmine Crockett. I do think she's an effective messenger. I think this was a mistake. And I think when you make a mistake, you have to own it.
Like, it's the apologies are in the criticism. Like, call her out for her. What you did was classless. It was disgusting. Listen, when President Trump made the thing where he was that reporter was going at him and he made a little arm joke, everyone called him out and was like, "Hey, man, that's not cool." You know, like I say things. I push the limits as a comedian sometimes, and if I go too far, I'll be the first one to say, "Like, hey, my bad." You know, but there's a certain level. But this wasn't a joke. This was an attempt to try to be they got that thug memo and the F word memo, because that's the other one. All of them say the F word now, but it's out of context and never used in the right way. So, you know, and I feel like where they push accountability, but they do not practice it at all.
Yep. 100% agree. Brother, could you imagine going back to Walls? Could you imagine if I had said that?
Oh.
Could you imagine if Donald Trump had said that?
Or I had
said
it.
We would be torn apart, intimidating people, threatening people.
Violence, calling for violence.
Yeah, threatening violence. Exactly. But when the left does it, when the Democrats do it, you know, okay, cool. They said something they should have, but they're good people. Let's move on. And as far as Jasmine Crockett, you know what? As a Republican, I want her to be a spokesman. Absolutely, 100%.
Yeah, if I was a strategist.
100%, because we will never lose an election as long as she's their spokesman.
I would start booking her to
speak
at my events before I went out.
Exactly.
I'd be like, yeah, please, I'm running again. She's not even in my district, but this is what we're running against. You know, and it's just, you know, and you make a great point. You know, could you imagine if you and, like I've had issues with Facebook, who continues to run fake accounts of me and trying to fleece people out of money and bookings and, you know, romantic relationships with all these people. Apparently fake Tyrus is a hot commodity on Facebook these days. Right. But I'm upset and I'm frustrated with it. I've contacted Facebook several times. I'm like, listen, I don't even have an account. So there's no, you know, I don't even have a Facebook account. So these people who are doing this but you know what? At no time did I call for all my fans and friends and wrestling brothers to go out and vandalize Facebook buildings, or you see anyone on Facebook walk over and snatch their phone out their hand and tell them, you know, that they're a Nazi. And we're seeing with the stuff with Tesla, we're seeing this type of behavior that is inspiring the worst of our society to come forward and do things. And you would like to see some accountability. And it looks like the only way you're going to get that accountability is by voting. through the American people?
Yeah, the media is not doing it. I actually sat down with a local media outlet recently to talk about the Walls match. I said something about the attacks on Tesla, and they said, well, both sides have condemned that. And I'm like, no, they haven't. There's only like one or two congressional Democrats who have said anything, and that's it. You look at the Summer of Love, cities burning, and literally you have some dude standing in front of his background is a city on fire, and the ticker across the bottom is mostly peaceful protest.
Yeah, fiery, mostly peaceful. That's like being mostly dead.
Exactly, yes. You know, so it's backfiring now, though. You know, if you have any common sense at all, which Americans do, the vast majority do, you can see right through this. And I think a lot of it is they're just so desperate. The Democrats are so desperate to get back in power. The mainstream media is so desperate to have them back in power that we're literally living, and we did it in COVID too, right?
Yep.
We're literally living in 1984 where they're just inventing narratives. It doesn't matter what the reality on the ground is. It doesn't matter what the facts are. They just say what they want to say. And the problem is when you see the world, when you're out there and you're walking by a Tesla car that's just gotten keyed, or you're on the internet and you're seeing how idiotic could you be to go up and vandalize a Tesla, which has cameras on 360 degrees,
you're
getting filmed while you're doing it. Right. But when people see that, they're automatically sympathizing with Elon Musk. So it's backfiring on them.
Yeah. I think it all is backfiring. I think we have to leave it there. But I will say, I think the common understanding of this is common sense, ladies and gentlemen, common sense. And don't wear bright pants if you're going to do bad things to a Tesla. It's easier to spot you with a camera. But anyways, man, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining me. Until next time. And then I'm still training. I'll be ready when I get the call.
It sounds good. If he reaches out to me, you'll be the first to know.
All right.
Okay. Thanks, man.
All right. This is Tyrus filling in for Brian Kilmeade. We'll be back after these messages.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Upgrade your business with Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. Shop Pay boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning fewer carts going abandoned and more sales going cha-ching. So if you're into growing your business, get a commerce platform that's ready to sell wherever your customers are. Visit Shopify.com to upgrade your selling today.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
What it is, Tyrus filling in. And we've been talking about a lot of things today, and I always love anytime I get a chance to catch up with the great Mayor Glenn Jacobs. And, you know, like I said, America, we've been going through some hard times, and they put hard times on us. Like if you're a textile worker with 30 years on the job and they just kick your butt out the door for a machine. That's hard times. But the hard times are coming to an end, and we're starting to get into those good times. So keep it positive, keep it happy, and just do the work. This is Tyrus filling in for Brian Kilmeade on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Psych, it's Tyrus. Approachable. Who could be more approachable than me? Well, I guess I have my own gravitational pull, so you have to approach me whether you like it or not. That's just my magnetic charisma, as I like to say. And speaking of charisma, joining me today is the charismatic Fox News radio political analyst. Now, that's a title. I need to get analyst. Like, I feel like that means you're above extra. I'm just a Fox contributor, but I like to be a contributor analyst. But I will delay the suspense no more. Josh Crash Hour is in the house. What's up, good sir?
Great to be with you. Happy opening day. That's enough to get it.
Yeah, I'm excited. I mean, I got to be honest. I am mad at my Red Sox. I think we have a lot of great young talent, and we made some moves in the offseason, but letting our closer go, I am furious. Absolutely.
Well, that could be a hell of a division. I mean, the Yankees are injured, but they still have
the Yankees schmankies. There's this big monster bird called the Orioles who are young and not going anywhere.
They are, and I've jumped on the O's bandwagon as a DC Baltimore guy, but they lost their best pitcher from last year, so I'm expecting.
Yeah, but their farm system, and they got guys who don't have driver's license yet. You know, like they're listen, and the Rays are always tough. They're always going to not, you know, the Red Sox, again, like I said, I think I'm worried about the sophomore jinx because we had three rookies last year and one untraditional one. But we definitely made strides in the bullpen and some starters. But, man, I'm mad we let our guy go to the Angels. Man, I was just upset. And I'm just, I know the Chapman, I don't know, man.
Well, you know, hope springs eternal on opening day. It's always yes. That you don't have any losses. The rest of the season maybe not be quite as favorable, but it's going to be a great year, great division.
And, I think it's going to be great for I think baseball is going to be great for the country. You know what was nice when I was coming in the building this morning is there was a bunch of people standing by the refrigerator, and guess what they were talking about? Opening day. Everyone was talking about their teams. You know, you had a Pittsburgh Pirate fan that had the temerity discuss about their optimistic for this season, but it's good to see that we're not talking about, oh, did you hear what's happened on the news last night? Did you hear the latest speech? It's nice to get back to stuff that just, you know, builds camaraderie and is fun to talk about, and no one walks away offended.
That's right. Yeah, no, it's good. The sports at its best unite the country. You know, you have rivalries. You got a lot of. Talk trash to all my Yankees and Philly as a Nats fan. And the Phillies are probably biggest rival to the Soto going to the Mets is not a great thing for us Nats fans to have to deal with. But no, I mean it sports bring people together, and we could use a lot of that in Washington.
Yeah, you know, and it's pretty good to come together because rivalry isn't even the word for some of the stuff. Let me just get this party started. Roll number 9. This is Donald Trump in the White House talking about the courts pretending that they're the president.
We're getting them out in record numbers, and we're having a lot of problems with the courts because the courts want to pretend they're president, and they're not president. They didn't get 80 million votes, and they didn't. They're not. They can't do that to this country. That's not their job. But we're getting them out in record numbers.
Again, I'm the first one for the debate. I'm the first one to try to see things from different angles. I just don't see the angle of being in opposition for getting hardened criminals who are not supposed to be in this country to begin with. And on top of that, they entered the country illegally and they're practicing and living out their criminal dreams in this country. I don't see the argument.
Well, this is going to go all the way to the Supreme Court. This is the appeals court yesterday, including one George W. Bush appointed judge agreed with was one of the two judges on a three-court majority to rule against the White House. You know, look, the big question is about due process. And politically, I think Trump has the wind at his back. People elected him because he promised to be tougher on illegal immigration, to seal up the border, to make that a major issue in a way that you didn't see President Biden prioritize, at least until the very end of his administration. The thing that I think could slip up the Trump administration, and this is what the courts are dealing with now, is that some of the people from Venezuela that apparently were deported to El Salvador, that notorious prison, apparently didn't have any criminal records and were actually here legally on humanitarian reasons, and they were legally here in the country. So if it turns out that the claims that these were members of a gang were not true and they misrepresented the case in front of the courts, that's what could get them in trouble at the highest court in the land down the road. So look, I think politically you're right. Like, this is one of the big issues why Trump got elected, and I think he has a lot of running room to deal with illegal immigration and people here in this country illegally. But if you make mistakes, if you don't, you know, you're not honest or you misrepresent things at the court, that could get you in trouble. And that's why, you know, you got these checks and balances going on. And the fight that we're hearing from the president, we're hearing from the courts, are really much in full swing right now.
Well, you know, and here's the thing. And since you brought up Kristi Noem, let's roll number 10 and have you respond to this, which I think falls in line with basically what you've been talking about.
Do you guys have plans to send more TDA members to the prison we visited today? And how long are they going to stay there for?
You know, I think that is one of the discussions we'll continue to have. The president today indicated that he would be open to working with us in the future on still continuing to receive TDA members and MS-13 members. And so we are grateful for that.
Again, and I understand what you're saying, like if there was a mistake made, but that's the process. Because I'm sure once they are apprehended and they're brought back, you know, and they're in that situation, Then they can get lawyers and stuff like that, or they can find out, or they can prove themselves. But I feel like that's such a small percentage. It's a little hard to tell me if you got an MS-13 on your forehead that you're probably not MSN-13. They've been surveillance. There's been investigation. These guys are on the wanted list. So I think they are taking the steps. And if there is a mistake, which happens in all forms of law, there are things, you know, I was wrongly once pulled over for speeding. But those mistakes can be corrected. I think the bigger problem is allowing the hole as a mass to continue going on. I mean, we basically had millions and millions of undocumented people that we have no idea who they are, where they're from. And in a lot of cases we're seeing, these are some pretty bad individuals.
Well, that's the great thing about having a judicial branch, courts, because you have to back your claims up in a court. You can't just spin. You have to actually say these actually were members of that criminal gang that is notorious and should be – the administration should be aggressively trying to remove people. I mean, they just had a big success, by the way, today. They claim that they got a very
– top guy from MS-13.
MS-13. In Northern Virginia. So, I mean, those are good things. Like as long as it's true and as long as that's the case, these are going to be big political wins for the White House. Where they're going to get in trouble, though, is the great thing about the courts is that you have to, you know, back your arguments up with evidence. Right. And that's the challenge they've been facing so far. They've been claiming that most of these people are members of this notorious gang, but we're now learning in court and we're learning through other reporting that these actually people had tattoos, but they didn't have any, you know, gang tattoos. They actually misidentified some of this stuff. So that's what you don't want when you're dealing with something so serious as deporting people to a notorious El Salvadorian prison where, you know, you saw the images with Kristi Noem. You don't want to go there if you're wrongly accused.
No, and that has merit. But I also think that regardless of whether you're a criminal or not, if you entered the country illegally, you should be deported across the board. So, and that's where, you know, you let the process play itself out and corrections will be made. But I feel like there's such a double standard. Like if an American commits a small crime, they're like, oh, he needs to pay for his crime, you know, and, you know, forgets to pay a ticket on a suspended driver's license and has a warrant. And they're like, well, you know, it was just a suspended driver's license. So there's like this, but where, you know, entering the country illegally and they're like, well, you know, there's worse things. But I think if you're following the law, you need to follow the law, period. So when I hear, again, you don't want to be mistaken and end up in Guantanamo Bay. I 1,000% believe that. But I also think that you can also figure it out from over there, too. It doesn't have to be just letting, you know, people roam. If you're under suspicion and you've already have this probable cause because you've already entered the country illegal, you know, I still think you should be deported. And I think you should make things better for the people who are doing it the right way.
Yeah, no, and I think that was one of the criticisms of the Biden administration, which was they did not prioritize deporting people who were here in the country illegally, and that's what the American public wanted. I think the one thing though about some of the people who were who may have been sent to El Salvador at this prison is that they actually, many of them allegedly, were here legally as part of receiving humanitarian status. They were escaping communism, a really evil regime in Venezuela. They actually, some of them, not all of them, but some of them we now know have potentially, you know, reportedly at least been here legally for at least under these protection laws in our country. So that's another thing that the courts have to sort out. But you know, if they were here legally, at least under a humanitarian status, that's a difference than being here right. illegally and just crossing the border and breaking the laws.
But I think in being proactive in enforcing the laws that should have been enforced for the last 4 years. You'll be able to make that determination and figure out who's who and what's what in the process of it. And unfortunately, there's always going to be an exception to the rule. But I don't think the exception should be considered the norm. I guess that's my argument. Nothing was done for 4 years, so maybe it's a little tighter in the beginning while you figure out what's what and who's who and how many numbers we're dealing with and what the situation is. Because you can't have situations like what happened in Colorado, what happened in New York City, where you basically had Venezuelan gangs just setting up shop. And you don't want gangs anyways, American gangs or foreign gangs, but if you can eliminate the ones that shouldn't even be here, then I think you should.
Well, and the Supreme Court is going to get a big bite out of this apple. John
Yeah,
Roberts,
I'm very interested to see how this plays out.
Kavanaugh, Coney Barrett, those are going to be swing votes on a case like this. So that's going to be – there's going to be a big showdown at the Supreme Court, and I imagine we're all going to be following that closely when it gets to that point.
Well, let me ask you real quick before I have to let you go, because I'm always fascinated to hear your thought process. Rule number 12 for me. This is Boston's mayor.
No one tells Boston how to take care of our own. Not kings and not presidents who think they are kings. All over the country, people are feeling the weight of a federal administration that's attacking our sources of strength. The same people and purpose that make Boston great.
Yeah, no one tells Boston how to take care of our own. That's the laws tell you how to take care of your own. That type of rhetoric, we're not going to cooperate with the federal government, with the president. I just feel like it's irresponsible. You can have a difference of opinion, but breaking the law or just flat out saying we refuse to cooperate, how does that help anyone?
Yeah, well, that's interesting. That's Michelle Wu, the mayor of Boston, very progressive mayor. She's, interestingly enough, in the middle of a campaign against another Democrat who happens to be the son of the New England Patriots owner, Bob Kraft. So as a politics guy, I'm following that race pretty closely.
I'm in it now.
Definitely. Yeah. And I'm actually a Pats fan.
Yeah, so am I. So you're not getting any wins anytime soon, so this will be interesting.
But he's running as a Democrat, who's a more moderate Democrat, especially on some of the issues like you know, she's definitely on law and order issues, on criminal justice issues. She's definitely very much to the left and has taken a lot of heat for that.
She's a strange bird, because when I say that, like, she threw a Christmas party where she said no white people were allowed and her husband's white.
Yeah.
Like, it's just weird. Like, does anyone not think it through? I mean,
I'm sure you saw the NPR hearing on Capitol Hill yesterday where the craziness, the wokeness of, like, that moment in time in 2020, that was coming back to bite these people who were just drinking the Kool-Aid, and all of a sudden the reality has kind of reestablished itself. And you're seeing that in cities too. A lot of left-wing mayors, Chicago, I know Brandon Johnson has like a 6% job approval rating, the left-wing progressive mayor in San Francisco got ousted. You're seeing this in deep blue cities across the country. Andrew Cuomo trying to make a comeback in New York. You know, this is a real test for whether they're moderates of the Democratic Party, and Josh Kraft is one of them. But there are a lot of other folks that are saying enough is enough. We need more moderation.
Do you think this is a moment for common sense moderate Democrats to regain a hold on the party, or is it just progressive in the mainstream media just too in love with the progressives, because their new memo, the F word memo that's out, with them all cussing, all of a sudden, miraculously, they all start cussing, and it's always out of context and it's not smooth. Like, cussing is an art form, as a guy who cusses.
It's so inauthentic, too. It's kind of embarrassing, right? This is a moment for the party. They need to figure out who they are. They have they're in a disarray. They don't know whether they want to go left, they want to go to the center. There are smoke signals, though, in these cities where they've been badly governed, crime's out of control, you've got a lot of disorder, and moderates are trying to make a comeback. And if someone like an Andrew Cuomo wins in New York City, if Brandon Johnson gets ousted in Chicago, and then you get more moderate leaders, that might be the first step they need to take to show that they can actually govern and lead effectively.
Yeah, like, how can you be less popular than Lori Lightfoot? I mean, that's hard to do.
Yeah, you never. As a pessimist, you never expect that you can always hit further rock bottom. Chicago voters have quickly learned.
Well, and again, because you need two strong parties to have good checks and balances, but you would like to have a connection of common sense, and at least on top of what I think Bill Maher coined the phrase 80-20 issues. Yeah. Isn't that an opportunity for moderate Democrats to be like, listen? The adults are back in the room, and because right now I feel like the Democratic Party is a party of activists, necessarily part of the politicians or the moderates. They've kind of just been submerged. You know, I guess it would be like if the Tea Party completely took over the Republican Party.
Yeah, no, and you're seeing this battle take place between AOC and Chuck Schumer, and I'm actually sort of surprised that it seems like Democrats are going after Schumer now as a sign that they're willing to fight and that they're going to the left. And Schumer's no moderate. You know, he's pretty liberal himself. So, I think there are going to be these little battles and as part of the larger war within the Democratic Party. If they go further left as a response to President Trump, they're going to marginalize themselves and only hurt their political prospects. I think it is. And I think in the cities, though, they have hit rock bottom in certain cities so much, literally. That it's actually created the opportunity for the middle to find itself and fight back. You haven't seen that in Congress. Democrats still haven't gotten that memo.
No, and you're seeing it in California. So, but unfortunately, we got to leave it there. I ran out of time because, you know, like I said, I could listen to this politic and talk all day long, and I appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us today. And again, this is Tyrus filling in for Brian Kilmeade on The Brian Kilmeade Show. We'll be back after this.
You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Every idea starts with a problem. Warby Parker's was simple. Glasses are too expensive. So they set out to change that. By designing glasses in-house and selling directly to customers, they're able to offer prescription eyewear that's expertly crafted and unexpectedly affordable. Warby Parker glasses are made from premium materials like impact-resistant polycarbonate and custom acetate. And they start at just $95, including prescription lenses. Get glasses made from the good stuff. Stop by a Warby Parker store near you.
A talk show that's real. This is The Brian Kilmeade Show.
What it is, this is Tyrus filling in for Brian Kilmeade on The Brian Kilmeade Show, and we keep it real, even if keeping it real goes wrong. But so far today, we've been on the right course other than, you know, what's going on in the world today. And again, we've gone through some hard times, and we're turning those hard times to good times, and we just got to respect the process, and we see good things coming, and the opposition's going to be what it is. But understand, if they don't come with ideas and they don't come from – if they don't come from a place where they're trying to improve the situation or at least give us a different way of looking at things, then they're really not trying to help. So just stay the course, enjoy yourselves, do more hobbies, do more exciting things, go outside and play. And speaking of going outside and play, coming up next, I'm having Stacia Madden coming on from Beacon Hills, where my daughter is learning all things equestrian. So you definitely got to stay tuned for that. I'm a horse dad, and that's another reason why I'm here, because I need horse money. So that's why I'm filling in for Brian Kilmeade today on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Well, you're kind of with Brian Kilmeade. You're with Tyrus, as I am filling in for the big B-Reel today. And I'm excited to have my guest on right now. Stacia Madden, who is the owner and head trainer of Beacon Hill Stables, where my daughter is learning the equestrian life, and I'm learning the life of a horse dad, and it is an exciting one. So thank you so much for being with us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, always a pleasure. Okay, there you go. So right now you were, first of all, a coach, as I like to call you. Thank you for taking this time this morning. Now, you are in the thick of the equestrian season right now in Wellington, Florida, correct?
Yeah, there are a couple circuits that go on during the winter, and we chose to do the Wellington season, and it's a three-month-long circuit down here in Wellington, Florida.
So what is that like for – and then you're a native – you're not – you don't live in Florida. Now, for the sport of equestrian hunter jumpers and jumpers and equitation, what is that like basically being on the road for 3 months? I mean, is there any breaks to go home, or you're just there?
It's kind of turned into — a lot of people have turned into having places to stay down in Florida because the circuit has gotten so long. It didn't used to be quite this long. It started off being an 8-week circuit, and it's just kind of grown over time. So I'm lucky in the fact that now that I spend 4 months down here, that I have a home down here. But I am looking forward to starting to heading back to New Jersey. But I think when you are an equestrian and you're traveling and you're used to going to all these competitions, you always start looking forward to whatever the next event is. So now that we're getting ready to leave Florida and head back to New Jersey, we'll start looking forward to the next events that are on our calendar.
So I have seen as a father of a daughter, I have seen the change in my daughter since she's started this. And I call it a lifestyle almost as a sport because I've seen it transcend in so many things. The discipline, being on time, you know, everything. You guys have a pretty solid dress code. I know sometimes other girls are like, oh, what color jacket are you going to wear? And my daughter's like, we only wear the required jacket. It's black or navy blue. That's it.
And traditional, yes.
Yes, and I love that. And I think, do you think the traditions that we've kind of we've laxed on in this country a little bit, it's refreshing to me to see it. And how are you able to, with this, you know, growing trend of lightening rules and lightening, you know, softening up on stuff, how are you able to maintain that?
I think the riding is so character building for the horses because there are so many negative influence on kids these days between, you know, the media and pop culture and politics. And somehow when they get with their horse, because the horses need consistency and they need patience and they need dedication, it really helps kids kind of prioritize their emotions, their life. And these horses become dependent on the kids, but the kids also learn a lot from the horses. The horses are kind of a reflection of what the rider is telling them. So the life lessons that you're talking about, I think, are very real. And I think the kids do come away with a tremendous amount of self-confidence with the bond with their horse.
And, you know, the one thing I've noticed is I would definitely say it's a woman-dominated sport. And I think that's a good thing. And I like that there's starting to be light shining on it. And there seems to be a lot of interest because America wants to get back outdoors and back outside. If you could give advice for someone who was looking to get their daughter or son, for that matter, into the equestrian world, because it is such from what I'm seeing, just it's like building little gentlemen and little ladies again. You know, it's just it's very respectful. I love the uniforms. What advice would you give a family that was starting to want to get information about getting into this sport?
I would say for sure you see a lot of female riders at the age that your daughter's riding right now. Interestingly enough, in Europe, it's pretty much male-dominated. So I would say whether it's male or female, it's a very good sport to introduce children to. Really, the bond starts early, you know, just learning how to take up-down lessons at a local facility that you can find that introduces some very basic riding lessons, or there's summer camps that have horseback riding as part of their camp. And a lot of relationships for these kids that have become equestrians have started at a very basic level at a summer camp or riding at a carnival or being at a dude ranch. And the kids take to the relationship of the horse, and then it grows into them wanting to spend more and more time. And then the parents ultimately end up finding themselves at an operation like Beacon Hill when the kids want to take that relationship to another level and start showing and competing.
You know, one of the things that when I am there, whenever you or one of your wonderful training staff go to coach my daughter, I always walk away because it's like that's between player coach, and I don't need to be a part of that. But one of the things that I do like about you is sometimes the girls get a little obsessed with ribbons, you know, and you had a great line like I ribbons I'm not concerned with. It's the process that I'm concerned with. Are you getting better? Are you not making the same mistakes? And I thought that was such a awesome coachable moment. And at the same time, that philosophy, again, is kind of an old school philosophy. Where did you come up with that philosophy on teaching them it's more about being better every time necessarily than
I think it's more about just watching the growth between the horse and the rider, because the rider is giving all the instruction to the horse. The horse isn't able to look at the course, walk the course, hear the trainer. So the rider is trying to figure out how to build this relationship. And I'm always watching that relationship grow. And when I see this moment in the show ring where they've come together, regardless of the ribbon or the outcome, It's what we're working towards, and it's what that rider actually ultimately ends up feeling. So you're right. I do say you're not putting ribbons on the tack room. You're trying to learn and grow and build a relationship with your horse. And I think that's why most of the kids get into this sport. If they were just purely competitive, they could be doing a lot of different sports, but they're loving the relationship about how do I work with this animal that has a brain of its own and emotions of its own, and how do I crack that code and get into there and work with that.
Well, you speak with so much passion, and I love that. When were you always into horses? Was it something that was as a child? It was just you were drawn to it. What was your connection that has basically been your life's work building Beacon Hill to what it is today?
I grew up in Indiana, down the street from a farm where my best friend had chickens, horses, goats, cows. And we would go on pony rides, and it was my mother who said, you know, if you're going to be around horses, maybe you should learn how to actually be around them. So I went to a local stable, started taking my up-down lessons, and I was that kid that was afraid to canter and would go into the center of the ring when it was time to canter. And the instructor said, you know, if you get your own pony one day, it'll probably build that relationship. And for my 7th birthday, I ended up getting a pony, and the rest is kind of history. It just took on a life of its own after that.
You know, I had to learn, because I thought I knew horses. Like, I thought it was walk, trot, gallop. And then I learned that word canter. So some of the people at home are like, what's a canter? It's like, it's not quite a run, and it's not really a jog. It's like it's a slow run. Is that the best way to describe it?
So we're in show jumping, and in dressage, they've got different gaits because the horses don't jump. But in show jumping, we use the terms walk, trot, canter for the different gaits of the horse, and they have different beats. But we're using the canter to facilitate the jumping. And it also turns into a gallop when you're doing jump offs. But it's basically talking about the balance of the horse to be able to make this four-legged creature be able to navigate these jumping obstacles with a rider on their back.
Yeah, it's like they have a rhythm. It's almost like a good song. You know, like I always, when I watch my daughter jump, or when I watch, as you know, we go and watch the pros watch, I think literally every night we're there, she's obsessed. And,
yeah.
You know, she keeps a little scorecard, and we've been trying to pick who's the winner, and she's actually been on fire. She picked the last two winners at the showcase.
It's interesting that you talk about the rhythm, because when you're coaching kids in the very beginning of their career, a lot of coaches will talk about counting when their kids are cantering to be able to help establish that rhythm, because that's mainly what we're talking about is finding that rhythm and helping the horse find their perfect balance. We call it self-carriage.
Yeah, it's very, like I said, it's very cool. You know, another thing is that I've learned a lot in it's been over a year, a little over a year since April, since my daughter got involved. But a lot of people don't know the opportunities that also come from this, because sometimes people just, they live in their own bubble, and it's like, this is a great opportunity for girls to go to college. This is an opportunity for girls to travel over the world. There's opportunity to go pro. I mean, I had no idea the level of opportunities that are there for this. Like, you know, we always hear about the NFL and, you know, the NBA and all the mainstream sports. But someone can, and yourself included, someone can have an amazing career in the equestrian world. And I did not know how far reaching it was. I was actually shocked by that. And I was surprised that more people don't know how many opportunities can arise from getting involved in this sport.
I think the colleges that have the D1 riding really has opened a lot of doors for kids. They used to think that when they were done with their junior years, when they would turn 18, that riding was kind of over for them, and it was a very difficult transition when they went to college. And now that college offers these riding teams, and these kids are getting full scholarships and partial scholarships and being treated just like the D1 athletes, it's really helped bridge the gap for them to keep horses in their lives and also to continue it through school. And I think the colleges have realized that horses build good kids. They've learned about leadership and they've learned about, you know, their time management, their peers. There's so much that goes along with it. And I think it carries right over into college. What kids do with it after college, they can go a lot of different ways. Like you said, turning pro, staying in the industry.
You know, I was thinking about that turning me into, because one of the things that my daughter does now is, you know, she goes to walk her course. And those people don't know, like before they, when they jump, they're allowed to walk the course and see the angles and her with her trainer, they'll adjust they'll strategize and they'll come back. So now she tracks every route. If I don't drive the exact same route from the arena to the house, she will correct me. Like, you're on the right trail. You got to go right here. Then you go left here. And I said, listen, you're not jumping me right now. Okay. Like, but the attention to detail, like there, she has a pattern to track in the house from the bathroom to the kitchen to this. And I'll be like, what are you doing? She's like, these are my paths. These are my patterns. And it's so cool to see, that I no longer have to, or her mom no longer has to be like, hey, make your bed or organize this and that. I was there last week and she had like something on the side of her boot and I was like, oh, that's not bad. And she's like, no, it's bad. And then she shined and cleaned her boots before she went. And she was just quote flatting that day. That's like a practice when with the horse mm-hmm. or whatever. But I it's across the board, you know, there's not like a messy kid in the barn. You know what I'm saying? I just like, I cannot yep. believe. And everyone's like everyone's well spoken, very respectful. You know, you don't see a lot of the things that we have problems with kids in school today, with like phones and stuff, or, you know, they got the headphones on, like everyone's interacting, engaging. And it's a really awesome thing to see. Where would you like to see the sport going in the next, you know, 4 years, given this burst of everyone trying to get back outdoors and getting active?
I mean, I think that's one of the lovely things about our sport is we are working with animals. We've got passion. We're outside. We get to travel. And these kids are getting to work with coaches. And it can turn into a lifelong passion for them. So it's not necessarily where the sport's going to go. It's kind of where each rider wants to take it.
Awesome.
But the fact that you can go all the way to the Olympics and you can still continue to do it when you're in school and college, and then even when you graduate and become an amateur, I just love the pathway that riders can take it as far as they want to.
Well, and like I said, I'm seeing it firsthand, and I thank you for your time today. And again, you guys still are finishing up strong in Florida and Wellington. And then you got some big events, I think, in Kentucky and Michigan coming up. So you guys are getting ready. Like you said, you always look into the next jump. Of course, best of luck and wishes to you. And again, thank you so much
for
a very cool
me.
Interview. Yes, ma'am. And we'll be right back after this.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hi, Tyrus back filling in for Be Real. And, you know, since we're talking about marinating on this, I got a chance, like I said, to talk into Station Madden. And one of my daughters rides equestrian and plays soccer. My son plays baseball and wrestles and does his customization. My other daughter plays basketball and is in drama. My other daughter, just rolling out plays softball and swims and plays an instrument. And I think it's important that we all get back to getting our kids outside, off the tablets, get back on that crunchy green stuff called grass, enjoy a little sun on your face, and start getting back to the parks and getting back to playing little leagues and just let's take the outdoors back, America. Let's get active. You know, let's get off the couch. I'm doing my thing. I'm watching what I eat. I'm training hard because I want to be around to chase my kids. And I think we've had a rough 6 years and I think we need to really start pushing that. So I have one rule in my house. It's simple. Either you get in something or I'll find it for you. And they usually will find something before I have to. So, you know, and myself, you know, the same thing. Like, I'm practicing what I preach. I'm back in the gym, not for like 15, 20 minutes. I'm in there for 2 hours. I had to get up way earlier for my schedule, watching what I eat. My good friend Mike Bell got me on some cool protein stuff that's all cow organs. So take that, vegans. And just taking and embracing getting back outdoors again, you know, going for walks. And I cannot impose upon you how much going for a walk will really help you figure things out or ride your bike or do whatever. But let's get back outside and let's get our kids outside, because busy kids are happy kids are smart kids. And now that's just something for you to marinate on you know. I think I say my name enough, and I don't have a last name for a reason, because it's plain and simple. Just tell it like it is, not how they want it to be. And that's why they call me Tyrus. Enough said.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Remix. You know, it's not Brian Kilmeade. It's Tyrus in the house filling in for the little big guy. I'm excited today because I'm getting ready to sit down and do a little politicking, talking about the whatnots and the have-nots and the ongoings of what's going on in these last few crazy days in the media with my esteemed colleague, Griff Jenkins. What it is, Griff. Thanks for joining me today.
Hey, what's going on, Tyrus, man? I love having you in the Kilmeade chair. And listen, there's no news in Washington. I don't know what you talk about. We've been so bored around here, nothing to talk about. We never hear from the president. Oh, wait, no, I forgot. That was the last administration. Here, we're literally not sleeping or eating, Tyrus. It's crazy in D.C. right now. It's like, in every way, it's like drinking from a fire hose every day.
Wow. I'm just going to, you know, I'm with Greg Gutfeld on this. This is not a story. This is it's a winery. You know, it's like the signal, you know, war plans, or now they're attack plans and now they're assault plans. But like, blowing this out of proportion, and what way? Let me play this out here with number one, with Donald Trump with the White House on the signal and accountability.
Well, I don't know about downplaying. The press upplays it. I think it's all a witch hunt. That's all. I think it's a witch hunt. I wasn't involved with it. I wasn't there. But I can tell you the result is unbelievable.
It just, I don't understand at what point do you realize? I mean, like, I get it. I guess Wile E. Coyote never got it with a Roadrunner. But I just, at what point do they look and be like, this is not the way to make things better?
Well, you know, listen, Tyrus, let me step back for a second. I've been in this town since the mid-90s, and what we have had for the last 30 years is the bureaucratic status quo that has not served the American people well. And over those three decades, that frustration across partisan lines, both Democrats and Republicans, the government became bloated, ineffective, and the American people got frustrated. And that's the essence of what Donald Trump tapped into. And having those 4 years off, he realized he would come back with an agenda in an administration to attack it in every way, from Doge and Musk cutting the waste, fraud, and abuse, to putting people like Pete Hegseth, who you and I know very well as friends, that is a committed warfighter whose heart is more dedicated to the warfighter ethos than any previous defense secretary we've had. That's why he's in the job. And your point about it being all to do about nothing, look, I think there is fair criticism about important details being shared on Signal, but we also need to acknowledge, as President Trump is kind of trying to you know, indicate, that Signal is commonly used. And that's why you saw CIA director testifying, saying the thing was loaded on my computer when I got the job, because they do use it. And so this may be something to examine and look into. And it could be, obviously, that this should not have gone the way it did in terms of Pete, Secretary Hegseth, sharing an update as he defended while he was on the ground in Hawaii yesterday. But at the end of the day, it does simply overlook the fact that we are successfully wiping out the Houthis right now, and there was no major disaster like the withdrawal of Afghanistan. And so you have to step back and look at, is this new approach of finally doing things differently working? And, you know, if you're a results-oriented person, and I think most Americans are, you're getting the positive result. Now, there will be, I think, appropriate time to, you know, Monday morning quarterback and look into, and you're going to have, obviously, the White House is putting this investigation on how this happened and what needs to change. But I do think that you're onto something about this being blown out of proportion, but yet this is Washington, and this is the only area that the Democrats seem to have had any opportunity to try to legitimately criticize the administration. So they're leaning in, and you're going to hear and continue to see everybody calling for Hegseth's resignation, and people should be held accountable, et cetera, et cetera.
And see, that's the thing that, and I'm fine with that, and I agree, there should be, criticism is fair. But when you start, you know, Pete, I thought he took it head on. And again, this is new for them, because we had 4 years of, you would have somebody with a notebook telling you that they will get back to you, or some before that said they'd circle back to you, but they never really did get back to us. Let me paint him before Pete here. He makes, to support what basically you just said, Pete, I think he's just put it out perfectly.
Nobody's texting war plans. Well, I noticed this morning out came something that doesn't look like war plans. And as a matter of fact, they even changed the title to attack plans, because they know it's not war plans. There's no units, no locations, no routes, no flight paths, no sources, no methods, no classified information.
I mean, that's a pretty long, scathing explanation. Then you had Mike Waltz says, I take full responsibility for it. The president talked about it, said they're working on it and make sure it doesn't happen again. I feel the criticism is fair, but I also it feels it matches the response. I think the response matches the criticism. I don't see the, you know, oh, we need to get somebody fired over this.
Yeah, no. And look, at the end of the day, you know, this is a Signal mishap. This is not a national security disaster. And one thing that's worth noting that doesn't get enough attention is that Caroline Leavitt stands every day at the White House podium and will take constant questions about it and try and reiterate and explain the White House position in 17 different ways for my fellow reporters to understand. And President Trump also talks to the press every day, it seems like, in the White House, and will give his position. And so we're getting, you know, this transparency that they promised to address what, as you point out, is justified criticism, but they're taking it head on, and Hegseth as well, taking it head on. And now we're now this whole incident has turned into, you know, a bit of a semantic battle on whether this Atlantic editor, Goldberg, who is openly anti-Trump in so many previous instances, fully understands war plans and attack plans and what this was and what it wasn't. And so that's why you've got the White House in a transparent effort trying to define, okay, let's talk about that. Here's what this is. But at the end of the day, it keeps arriving back at the same place, which is it a Signal mishap? Yes. Is it a national security disaster? It doesn't seem that that's the case by any casual observer looking at the facts.
You know, and again, to your to acknowledge, since I won't say to your point, to acknowledge what you had just said earlier. They are all taking it head on. Marco Rubio's addressing it. And then here's number six, Caroline Levitt, giving a pretty solid explanation.
Why aren't launch times on a mission strike classified?
Again, I would defer you to the Secretary of Defense's statement he put out this morning. There were various reasons he listed, things that were not included in that messaging thread that were not classified. And again, going back to the American public, do you trust the Secretary of Defense, who was nominated for this role, voted by the United States Senate into this role, who has served in combat, honorably served our nation in uniform? Or do you trust Jeffrey Goldberg, who is a registered Democrat and an anti-Trump sensationalist reporter?
I mean, that's pretty much clear, concise. I don't understand the game plan. I guess that's my issue. I know they something else they've done is they've decided to add cussing to their like they had everything they do and is all everyone does it at the same time. So it's one person. There's one person pulling the strings. Probably the person who's running the country for the last 4 years.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. The cussing. Look, I grew up in the South. I grew up in Memphis, Tennessee, and I can't tell you how many times as a kid, Tyrus, that I heard from my sweet mother, William Griffin Jenkins, you say one more cuss word, I'm going to wash your mouth out with soap. Yet here we are today, and Democrats on any given day are blasting expletives that it's clearly become part of the messaging plan, I guess, for shock value. Now, in fairness, I'm not going to deny that I am very given to blurting out expletives, particularly when our stressful, crazy jobs, you know, meet challenges. But I don't think it's working. And another thing that Levitt was saying, Caroline Levitt was saying yesterday at the White House, is that this story proves that Democrats are basically orchestrating a campaign against the White House just because they want to, because they're doing it. And you have to wonder what good does that serve the country, particularly when it's got F-bombs all throughout it. I think ultimately, at the end of the day, what's going to be interesting to watch, Tyrus, is how long the Democrats lean in to the fallout and try and make this a 4-5-2 week day story.
Oh, yeah.
As opposed to, you know, while Democrats today are going to scream about the signal thing and try and turn up the volume, you're going to have a press conference with the Attorney General and the FBI director about capturing the top NS-13 leader on the East Coast. You've got Secretary of DHS, Secretary Kristi Noem, standing in front of dozens of violent, tattooed gang members in El Salvador saying, don't come, otherwise we're going to put you here. And it's like this administration is just going to keep charging forward, delivering wins, while the Democrats are going to try and hang on to anything they can and try and discredit and you know, make a misinformation campaign, as the White House says, against the various cabinet secretaries and ultimately the Trump administration's agenda.
You know, and they're here's the thing. I am and I cuss a lot. I even cuss on TV. Like I would say that I have a tapestry for it, like how an artist paints on a canvas, my use of cuss words. But there's levels to the game. If you don't cuss and then all of a sudden you're using the queen mother word, you know, and it's just people are like, what? If you're not good at cussing, you shouldn't cuss. There's ways to cuss. There's a style to it. There's a flair, because it can be something that can add, you know, it's like adding like glitter or seasoning to your.
Hell yes, brother.
Exactly. Look, that's what
it is. I'm the kid that grew up. Listen, I'm in my 50s. I grew up hiding under my, you know, bed sheets with my buddy sleeping over in grade school, and we'd gotten Richard Pryor's cassette tape listening to him. Nobody. Yes. Richard Pryor wrote the book on how to say the F-bomb and everything else, and we loved it. Then came Eddie Murphy, and there were, you know, comedians particularly did, and it sort of changed the way we could craft the powerful use. And to be honest, sometimes just ripping off a slew of expletives feels good. However, it doesn't seem to serve a eloquent purpose for esteemed lawmakers who were voted by constituents to be running around on Capitol Hill just slinging them for a headline.
Yeah, and it doesn't work. It's so forced. It's like it's like Liz Warren drinking a beer with her husband, and he had his jacket on to leave the whole time. And hey, would you like a beer? No, I don't think I will. You know, it's like that's not how it is. Like, just why be yourself? I don't understand the, you know, like, oh hey, there was an email. I guarantee you that was like, hey, we got to start cussing. We got to seem hip and cool.
Yeah,
you know.
And why did they do that? Well, I would submit to you one possible answer is that they saw during the campaign at Trump rallies, Donald J. Trump, in a very artful way, say, you know, Reverend Franklin Graham says I shouldn't cuss, and I try not to, but this whole thing about me is BS. You're yep. feeling it. You're thinking it. And you know what? He got a standing ovation for it because that's what people are feeling, a very different more authentic way of bringing that into the national discussion. And I think Democrats are like, we got to do like that. If we cuss, we'll sound authentic because no. Trump's authentic and we're not, and we need to sound authentic.
He's a craftsman. You know, I'm saying is an art form to cussing, and President Trump would be Van Gogh in this situation, and no pun intended about the ear at all. But you think about the way he says what he says, the timing of it, it's not the cuss word. It is like, oh, he made me, man, I get it. I'm so passionate that I need an extra adjective in there to talk about it too. The difference is if he just said the cuss word, if he just came out there and said BS, the crowd would be like, well, why would you say that? That sounds weird. You know, and that's the problem yeah. is they just, the disconnect is so abhorrent, or I don't know who they're talking to, or I guess are you waiting for the real Democrats to show up and start? Like, you don't have to like the guy, but if it's a good idea, it's good for the country, everyone should be on board. It used to be that way.
I think that it shows the fact that they are having to coordinate this attempt to use expletives in their messaging tells us that they don't have a clear, defined message. They don't have clear and defined leaders that can do it without having to think about it.
Exactly.
And, you know, when you've got Tammy Duckworth or whatever putting out, you know, effing idiot comments, it just feels like, you know, they were all on a conference call saying, I don't know what we're going to do, what we should do. And someone says, let's do this. And you're like, yeah, why not? Let's throw that at the wall and see if it sticks.
Yeah. And it's not sticking. And speaking of that, they're sticking to me on time. Mr. Griff Jenkins, man, it has been an absolute pleasure. I can't wait to do this again.
Tyrus, great to join you. Have a good one, buddy.
All right. Like I said, this is Tyrus filling in for the Brian Kilmeade Show. We'll be back after this.
Increasing your intelligence quotient.
What the hell did you just say?
It's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
What it is, this is Tyrus again filling in for BK while he's on assignment. I think he's working on his leg game. There's been some jokes made about he skipped a couple leg days, so he's trying to get it together. Speaking of getting it together, man, Griff Jenkins, if that's not the coolest name that I've ever heard, I just like talking politics with him, man. He is such a positive – even if you're disagreeing with him, he has such a joyful – tone in his voice when he's talking about, you could tell that dude's passion is politics, you know, the way that he talks. And he always makes good, strong points. And, you know, it's always nice to come away from a conversation when you learn a little something. And I think that's the one thing is, again, we're going outside. We're also talking again and let people finish their sentence, even if you don't like it. Try not to interrupt, because if you don't, you might learn something, or you might learn something about who not to talk to anymore. Again, this is Tyrus filling in for the Brian Kilmeade Show. We'll be right back.
fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
We're getting them out in record numbers, and we're having a lot of problems with the courts because the courts want to pretend they're president, and they're not president. They didn't get 80 million votes, and they didn't. They're not. They can't do that to this country. That's not their job, but we're getting them out in record numbers.
Joining me now is lawyer, friend, Reagan Charleston, also mother, small business owner, and last but not least, a reality TV star. Reagan, how are you this morning?
Good morning. When you say all that, stresses me out.
Yeah.
Don't remind me of all the hats I wear.
Yeah, it's a lot. You know, I do that same thing. When people start listening off the stuff I do, I get a little red in the face, too. Speaking of red in the face, what at the top before you came on, we're playing that soundbite. As a lawyer, when you're seeing what the judges are doing in terms of the deportation stuff, in particular, the one we were just talking about, how unbelievably shocking is it, the effort to keep these particular illegal immigrants who are also criminals in this country? How insane is the effort?
Well, okay. So this case presents, you know, complex procedural issues. You also have some complex laws that aren't often invoked. But I think the most shocking thing is the fervor from the public behind this. And I know we've talked about this before. Everyone should be on board with getting violent gang members out of the United States of America. That's the number one issue here. But with this case, you know, you look at it, it was filed by the ACLU. At the outset, you're going to be aware that there are political motivations, especially when you see clear evidence of forum shopping and venue selection. I think we would have seen a much different outcome had this been filed in Texas, where, you know, people argue it should have been filed.
Right. You know, is it ever good to know your judge's political affiliation or their marital status or their religion? Like, a judge should the less you know about the judge, the better, right?
That's how it should be. Yes. I mean, you shouldn't be aware of any of the personal attributes of a judge that's presiding over a case. And, you know, they're supposed to be neutral arbiters, and unfortunately they're not. And when you do file a case, the first thing you do when you're assigned a judge is look into their background. Who appointed them? What are their political leanings? I mean, those things do ultimately have an impact on the outcome of the case.
You know, and again, I'm not being a smart butt here, but like I'm more open to the idea of an AI judge. Like, based on what we're seeing now, because he's just going to process the facts, correct?
Well, okay, I'm a lawyer, so I have to, you know, I have to speak from my perspective. And no, I think that the courts are too politicized now. I mean, that's an issue, and
right,
one that we're going to have to face. But there is appellate review, and, you know, judges, unless it goes, you know, up to the Supreme Court, which we know is a political body too, unfortunately, even though it's not supposed to be, and there are levels of judicial review. But this, you know, it is interesting, and I think that we're going to see a lot happen in the coming days. That TRO is set to expire, and, you know, the government had moved to lift the TRO, or lift the stay, rather, or sought a stay on the TRO. But plaintiffs are going to move for a preliminary injunction in days. So this issue is going to be more fully briefed. I believe that they'll ultimately enter a preliminary injunction in this matter in the D.C. District Court, though.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. I was actually talking with the boys earlier about an injunction. Remember, fellas, we were saying injunction. Yeah, thumbs up. Yeah, that's exactly what we were saying. Great analysis, as always. I need you to switch to one of your hats now. I'd like to talk to the small business owner, if I may.
Of course.
How are things? It's, you know, right around the 100-day mark, or we're closing in on it. Have you seen an uptick? How are sales? Again, for people who don't know, what's the name of your company?
I have a jewelry business called Reagan Charleston Jewelry, and I have a shop in Canal Place in New Orleans, also an online website. And I will say that shoppers have had more confidence. I feel like our sales are trending back upward, which is fantastic because as a small business owner, the last 4 years have been difficult. We definitely saw a decline. People's expendable incomes were hit. I mean, you go to the grocery store and everything's extraordinarily expensive. And coupled with the lack of confidence that the public had in our administration and the uncertainty, people were saving their money and not shopping for, say, jewelry like I sell. So right. I'm really confident seeing that like uptick and numbers. So, yeah, I think we're headed in the right direction.
You know, I lived quite a few years in Louisiana. And anytime you hear that the businesses are starting doing good, it has such a trickle down effect, which means the economy is doing better. And that's what you want to have, given how things have been. They've been really tough. Again, one more hat change. Well, probably two, but another hat change. You're also a full-time mom. And, you know, you see what's going on with Linda McMahon and President Trump and the Department of Education basically trimming the fat and dissolving a portion of it. Are as a parent, do you feel good about this idea with department change in the Department of Education, or are you concerned about it? Because education has, as again, unfortunately, you never used to know your teacher's political affiliation, but now, you know, teachers want you to know everything, including their blood type, and it's just way too much information.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're not just teaching the basics to students anymore. We've leaned into indoctrination, but let's just look at public schools in general. Like, the Department of Education needed an overhaul. Public schools are terrible. Kids are not getting a decent education. I'm in New Orleans. My children have to go to private school. We could not put them in public school anywhere in the area and expect that they would get even a moderately decent education. I mean, our schools are failing our youth. And so something has to change. And I'm all for, you know, a complete overhaul and trimming that.
You know, I have asked a lot of parents about it, and I have yet to hear negative feedback. Absolutely at all. You know, and another hat change. What are you currently watching? As a former TV star and our current just in between gigs while you're lawyering and selling jewelry, what is your favorite or what is your guilty pleasure series or movie going on right now? Or do you even have time?
I don't have time, but I have made time for White Lotus.
White Lotus.
I love it. It's so good. Every Sunday, I'm like there to hit my max and watch that. Otherwise, it's like Spidey or, you know, Sesame Street, whatever is on in the background. I don't personally have time to watch TV, but I have definitely carved out time for White Lotus. It's so good.
Will you be taking the kids to see Snow White?
No, absolutely not.
not even a little bit.
You know, Reese asked, my daughter asked, and I was like, nope, we'll wait until that's on Disney Plus. I will not be.
Might be in a few days. You might not have to wait that long.
The way it's headed, I think they'll be streaming it soon. The box office numbers are just like tanking. And we've talked about this before. People don't want political beliefs pushed upon them. And this young woman, too big for her britches. And, you know, I think it's been extraordinarily detrimental to her career. And
her acting career is done. I think your box office.
She tainted everything regarding this film, and it's Snow White.
Yeah.
Like, of course, we love live action remakes of any classic, and she destroyed it. And I think that Disney would have been wise to really get a grip on her in the beginning and said, hey, this is for kids. We don't want to know about your political beliefs. Keep it together, go out, sing, put on a pretty dress. Like, this is something that's for children, and the fact that she used it as a soapbox to espouse what are largely offensive beliefs, terrible mistake. And I think that, you know, moving forward, I would hope that Disney sees what a, like, just damaging thing that is to put someone out there that just goes rogue.
Well, maybe just start hiring the talented ones with integrity opposed to hiring someone based on how they look. which we, like I said, we're cycling through the last of the woke movies that were made, you know, 2 years ago and a year ago. And we're starting to see them. But yeah, one of the things that she was quoted, I saw one of her interviews where she said, no matter what, whether you like her or don't like her, or she's shattered or whatever, no matter where she's at, people will line up like that. I think that right there got,
oh my God.
Yeah, it's just,
where's
the parents, right? Were you just about to say, like, where's, like, hey, like, we're your publicist. But I think
bold. I mean, yeah. How bold to think I'm so good that nothing I say or do can damage my, you know, the public perception of me. I mean, it's so incredible that these young people are just so misguided. And she's incredibly talented. And we should be talking about how talented she is, but she's completely destroyed that. And it's ignorance, you know. I mean, I think that, and I was just saying, you know, maybe Disney should have, you know, curtailed this in the beginning. But did Disney select her, you know, perhaps because she had these outspoken beliefs and was, you know, activist in her own life or whatever? Was it a Disney choice? And did it just fail miserably? I don't know, all the way around, terrible decision-making, terrible marketing, terrible branding. And, you know, ruined the Snow White live remake. And Gal Gadot is like a supermodel. I mean, we love her. Everybody loves her.
That to me is probably one of the most disturbing part is that, you know, you have the comments that she was making against Israel and against Jewish people and et cetera, you know, and all the pro-Palestine stuff. Like, you just read the room, you know. I've been on movie sets. I've worked with, there's supposed to be a bond there. You know, you're trying to create art together, and it's supposed to be an experience you look positively back on. And sometimes it, you know, some people think they're bigger than the business, or in this case, there was absolutely no humbling in the fame. But the thing about fame and stardom is it can go as fast as you get it. And I think one of the things that Americans are tired of, and it's hurt actors that, like, you're an actor. You want to entertain everyone. You don't tell half the country not to come to your movie, you know, because you know what? The half you're not telling is offended by that.
It's bad business. Yeah. It's totally bad business. And toe the line, like you said, read the room. But where is the humility? Like, I think what's humbling to this young woman in this case are the box office numbers and the fact that she's unlikely to ever be cast in a large-scale production again. I mean, she is just toxic. I mean, that's poison for any successful project at this point. And maybe other people will learn a lesson from that.
She's a bad apple.
That's all it takes. Well, that whole project. Think about all the people that worked on this and the money that went into it. And
what
a travesty.
It's a bad apple because in the movie Snow White, the evil...
Good one. Yeah, it's too early for me to pick up on all the jokes, but that was awfully good.
And maybe you could put the sense of humor hat on next time. That'd be
not yet. No, but looking back, I'm shocked at the last few years that people aren't starting to realize, like, keep it together. Don't talk about your political beliefs if you want to be successful in your business. I mean, it's especially when they're so terrible and unpopular. Like, it's just one of those things that I hope we're coming to the end of.
Yeah, I would like to get back to just getting to know people or being able to, not someone screaming at the top of their lungs because of who you voted for. I think it's sad, actually, that is the most important thing in your world. But again, I'm hoping we get back to good or... Getting back to normal. And I feel it's out there. Are you seeing the positive things in your community where people are more relaxed and moved on because the show's over? You're never going to have to he's not going to run again, so you're never going to beat him again.
I think that it was so cool to be progressive for so long. And, you know, I had friends that they would take up an issue just because they thought it was, like, the cool thing to do or, like, gave them credit. And without any knowledge of the substantive issues that they were basically, you know, just riding or dying for. And I think that now we've seen a shift where it's not cool anymore. Yeah. People are educating and informing themselves. And it's less and less, but you still have someone like Ziegler. I don't even know her name. Like, yeah. Her press is that bad. Rachel Zegler.
Yeah.
You see what she's done, and it's like, maybe this isn't the angle. No longer cool. So, yeah.
It doesn't, and it's not even, here's the thing. She can have all of those beliefs. This is America. I don't have to agree with or understand any of it. It's the way you present yourself in those beliefs. That it's the condescending, if you're not like me, there's something wrong with you, which goes against the whole point of demanding that you have free speech and be respected. When you have to get respect, you have to give respect. And it's funny to me that like their beliefs have, the only way they can substantiate their beliefs is by attacking the person who doesn't share the same belief, which to me means your beliefs are weak.
Oh, absolutely. No, there has to be decorum.
Good word.
You know, like I said, I think we're getting to be on the other side of it, maybe. But the lack of decorum is shocking. And you've got that terrible woman that is just in the press. I know you know who I'm talking about.
Yes.
That, oh, my God. Every time I watch some soundbite, I'm horrified that, you know, she's just so crude. And I don't know. I'm hoping that we can get back to, you know, some dignity and refinement and just decorum in general.
Just,
I don't know,
just regular good old decorum. And it is with a shred of decorum that I say thank you so much for your time, Reagan. Awesome as always. Best of luck with your businesses and all your hats. So you keep doing your thing. And till next time, again, thank you so much for coming on. This is Tyrus filling in for Brian Kilmeade on the Brian Kilmeade Show. I guess just said his name twice. We'll be back after this.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Man, again, this has been an absolute honor and privilege to fill in today for Brian Kilmeade on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Shout out to the staff. Also, I learned that there's actual computer screens here. You actually use them for a reason. So I appreciate that. Always learning. Had a great time today. Hope you enjoyed the guests. And of course, if you are hearing this voice and be like, you know what, I need to see more of that guy. I mean, of course, you can check me out on the Gutfeld Show and various Fox News shows, but you can also catch me on the What It Is comedy tour. You can get tickets at my Linktree, which is Linktree/Tyrus Smash. And I am going to be everywhere. A matter of fact, tonight I'll be in Andover, Massachusetts. Tomorrow, April 3rd, Grand Rapids. April 4th, East Lansing, Michigan. May 17th, Middletown, Ohio. July 7th, Tarver City, Michigan. And July 8th, Grosse Pointe. And I'm going all the way to October. Check it out on my X at Planet Tyrus. Just click there, and that's where you can get your tickets. It has been a real pleasure.
Fox News Audio presents the Fox Nation Investigates podcast, Evil Next Door, exploring the life and crimes of five serial predators from across the United States. Listen and follow now at foxtruecrime.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.